Our friend, political analyst and strategist Tom Serafin joins us now. How are you doing today? How's this day treating you?
Okay, good. It's nice to see the sun starting to show up a little bit outside.
And things are reopening.
Days, hey?
Yes, right. Yes, the weather. I mean, right. But things are reopening. You heard the mayor. We've got all kinds of plans for festivals and farmers markets and coming back this spring and summer. They've got the United Center back open for fans. I know you're a sports fan. Have you taken in any games at all, Tom?
Well, the Blackhawks, from what I understand, their first game with, you know, an audience, fans, will be May 9th. And the first one for the Bulls will be May 7th, so we're looking forward to that. I was over at the Sox game the other night, and it's been really tough to try to manage that crowd and compartmentalize them. And then everything is credit card, and no more people coming through the stadium, you know, with beer and sausages and anything else. It's really tough, you know, on any kind of operation that deals with the public right now. It's good to see some of this opening, especially, you know, Navy Pier. I mean, that's one of the biggest tourist traps in the world. It's in our backyard and hasn't been open.
I like how you call it tourist trap. The kids love it too.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
The first fireworks, you know. So.
Yes. Now that's going to feel cool to see. I like the fireworks over there, and I think we were talking earlier that there were too many fireworks last year, and none of them were the official fireworks. This year, it sounds like a lot of towns and villages and areas are going to go ahead with their fireworks displays, which is, it's cool to see that, Tom. It's really cool.
Yeah, you're right about last year. Too many unofficial. Everywhere.
Right. It was so. Don't remind us of that. Let's not have that happen again. Hey, I want to get to something here. We've got a lot of things going on locally, politically, but also got to get your reaction to President Biden's speech last night. I'm looking here, New York Times homepage banner headline: Biden makes case to vastly expand government's role. Washington Post: Biden pitches ambitious investment and tax plans as he recasts role of government. Fox News: Big government agenda. A lot of people also on the other side talking about how do you pay for this? There's a lot of money going out. What was your take, though, generally of the speech?
Well, first of all, I'd say that I thought President Biden did a nice job. You know, I didn't see it live. I saw it on tape. I thought he did a very nice job making the presentation. And what was ironic is that people always complained that he's going to have a gaffe here or a gaffe there. But I thought he delivered it very well. I know the White House today is disappointed at the numbers because, you know, the first speech for Donald Trump, you know, the state, he had 48 million people that watched. And last night, about 12, 13 million people watched Joe Biden's performance. So they're not pleased with that, but they're pleased with the message. And the irony of that message about bigger government is that it was exactly 40 years ago when Ronald Reagan said government is not the solution to our problems. Government is the problem. Mm-hmm. And last night, the idea was that government is the solution. More government will help us. And, you know, it's ironic that today we have this 6.4% increase in the first quarter of the gross national product. You know, the economy is on fire. And it's just moving, you know, with a great energy, you know, like 1,000 big trucks coming at you. So that's good. And that comes out of a 4.5% quarter four of 2020. So he's got the wind at his back. I don't know if he needs as much government as he says he does, because people are going back to work. You know, Target announced this afternoon also, you know, Little Village, they're going to hire 2,000 people for the distribution center. People are getting much more optimistic. The unemployment numbers for filing claims are down at the lowest rate since March of 2020 when the pandemic actually broke. So there's a lot of good news in the economy today. And as your newscaster said a few minutes ago, Amazon's going to rock everybody with their forecast after the market closes. So there's a lot of good things happening. His message about more government is what the Democrats want to see, but they're going to have a hard time in the Senate. So Senator Joe Manchin, you know, who's a Democrat from West Virginia, kind of a conservative Democrat like Hubert Humphrey and John Kennedy, he's concerned about the expansive size of government, and he's the key vote. So people are watching Joe Manchin right now.
I think we'll all be working for Amazon at some point, don't you think? Isn't that what we'll learn? I mean, really, you'll be the political analyst from Amazon and WGN. Yeah. I mean, this is what will happen. That's my prediction.
Yeah, I noticed. You know, I used to drive a truck, so I could drive the Amazon truck.
Oh, so you have the skills that are necessary for the, I don't. I have to learn. I have to learn a lot in order to pivot. I did notice that Ted Cruz took a little heat during the speech. They were calling him Ted Snooze because he nodded off, and he said it was very boring. Of course he did. And then Mitt Romney also dozed off a little bit. People said that him sleeping up there where he was in his the cheap seats up there, he was the most relatable thing that Mitt Romney has ever done. I mean, they're giving him some heat, like, you know, it just, you don't get any sense, even though President Biden talked a lot about unity, bipartisan came up. I didn't play the drinking game, but it came up a lot. And I just, you don't get the sense that that's happening.
No, I mean, the actions, you know, you have to see. Words are one thing, actions are something else. You know, Ted Cruz continues to be the greatest gift to the Democrats that the Republicans can give anybody. And Romney has always been what he is. He's pretty transparent that way. But, you know, when the president talks, he talks about being bipartisan. He talks about sharing, and he talks about trying to sit down and get together. I think they need to be stronger about illustrating that when they do have meetings, when they do have conferences, when they do have bipartisan get-togethers. They have to show the country that that's actually happening, because when we hear about it back home on the television stations and read it about in the newspapers, they tell us, they talk about it, but it's not happening. So you have to illustrate the effort. Once the people see the effort, if the other side or this side don't come together, then they can understand why sometimes you can't do everything in a bipartisan way. But I think the American public is smart enough to understand that, show us that you're actually doing it. If the other person is not trying to meet you halfway, then go ahead and do what you need to do. But right now we don't see that. But it's a young administration. They're still getting their feet planted. They've got a lot of time to work on it.
It's an interesting point, because I think that's happening locally in state government, and we want to get to some of that coming up with the governor calling out Republicans on the fair maps. We got to get to that, but I got to ask you something else. Please explain something to me, because I think you'll know this, Tom. Wait, this was 99 days in for Biden, not 100, and I'm told it wasn't even really a State of the Union address. I mean, tell me what's going on there.
I think that's, again, people picking at each other. You know, the president has the obligation to do it, but he can schedule it when he wishes to do it. So, I mean, that's it's like last night, you know, on the response, the senator, Tim Scott, the junior senator from South Carolina, he has a great story to tell. He's an African-American, but he's a Republican. So people say that he shouldn't be a Republican, he should be a Democrat. That's the same kind of stuff. And so last night, you know, the MSNBC and the CNN and others in the Democratic Party criticized him for, you know, coming out and saying this country is not a racist country and calling him Uncle Tim. It's that petty stuff that people keep picking at each other, that it's unnecessary. It's like having a family, you know, and then you're sitting down at dinner and then people starting arguing with each other because he had too much of the mashed potatoes versus he had too much gravy. It had nothing to do with the reality around him. And I hate to illustrate it that way, but that's the way it is, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Other thing I heard the president say quite a bit were, he mentioned working class, he mentioned immigrants, he mentioned union workers quite a bit during this speech, right? He was speaking to them.
Yes, yeah, and he's correct about the middle class disappearing, and that's a key talking point, and it's something that research will show you it's effective, because the middle class has disappeared over the last 30 years or 40 years, something that we all grew up with in my age. The middle class is what made this country, and the president keeps talking about that. The middle class is what's going to bring us back. We do have to get back to the middle class and give people an opportunity, and there's a lot of ways about doing it. And he thinks this is the way he needs to do it. The Republicans have a different perspective. But the middle class is a key talking point, and you're going to hear a lot about it in the off-year elections in 22, where traditionally, if you're in the White House, the opposition party will win on an average of anywhere from 18 to 22 seats, which would put the House of Representatives, the appropriation process, in the hands of the Republicans.
Hmm. It'll be interesting to see what happens there. I got the quote here. The American Jobs Plan, he called it the blue-collar blueprint to build America, said Wall Street didn't build this country. The middle class built this country, and unions build the middle class. It was a direct appeal to try to strengthen those ranks and speak to them as voters as well, I think. Hey, can we circle back on some local stuff here, Tom?
Sure. And just to say something about what you just said, there's a lot of truth to that. So historically, there's a lot of truth. So people understand that, you know, they understand historical truth that, you know, it's like somebody, you can't tell somebody what they just did was something that didn't happen. And that's a lot of the rhetoric in politics today. But when you go back historically on an issue like that, people get it and understand it.
Yeah, I hear you. I agree. We're gonna circle back. Something else too. I heard a little rumor about former Mayor Rahm Emanuel. He may be getting a post. We'll talk about that and some local politics, some big things going on with Tom Serafin in just a moment. But let's pause for a second here on WGN. Tom, okay, so we've heard a lot of rumors that former Mayor Rahm Emanuel might be getting some post. I mean, he was named for just about everything. Secretary of Transportation seemed like the big bet, and then they gave that to Buttigieg. Now, I'm seeing here in the Washington Post. Are you seeing this? Former Mayor Rahm Emanuel's he's going to be named ambassador to Japan, I guess. All right.
Well, he's working it, you know, he's trying to get back into the, you know, you're like you're merging, waiting to merge into traffic, and is a very heavily trafficked highway, D.C., and he's been trying to get back on that road, getting out of Chicago. You know, the Laquan McDonald shooting and that terrible thing with the video and all that really kind of roadblocked his career for a few years. But, you know, he's tenacious. He knows politics, and he sure knows the campaign business. He may not be a great manager of big metropolises like Chicago, but he's very good when it comes to understanding politics and how politics works. And he'd be a terrific campaign manager for somebody as well as he was at one time. But he's very good at that. And he knew how to work D.C. And to his success, you give him credit that he's reemerged in that particular. It's going to be interesting how he does in Tokyo. But certainly it's going to be interesting that the White House is doing this, and they're going to get some pushback, especially from some of the BLM folks. But it's going to be interesting how they manage all this.
But he'll be on a different time zone, Tom. Is he really going to be in the D.C. fray of things?
No. In order to get to Tokyo, he had to do the D.C. trick. He had to work everybody in the food chain at the White House. Everyone. I mean, and I'm talking about everybody in that process that we don't even know about, and deal with it as he did. And I think, you know, to his credit, I give him a lot of credit because he's a survivor.
Yeah, and terribly talented when it comes to politics and strategy and that sort of thing.
Exactly.
And so that'll be interesting. In time for the Olympics, he'll likely maybe be in Japan. Go ahead.
He ran the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee when they picked up 37, 38 seats and switched it to a veto-proof for Barack Obama in his first 2 years. You know, he had veto-proof agendas, majorities in the Senate and the House in the first 2 years when he passed the Obamacare legislation. And, you know, it was a great opportunity at the time for everyone when they had those veto-proof majorities. And that's very rare you see that in Washington, D.C. And he was responsible for doing that. And by doing that, he elected a lot of folks that were pro-life Democrats, conservative blue dogs, as they used to call them. Today, you can never get that done because the divisions are so deep. You know, either you're all red or you're all blue. You can't be purple. You can't be anything in the middle, which is what Joe Manchin is, a Democrat senator from West Virginia.
Right. Speaking of veto-proof majorities, let's talk about Springfield for a second. What's going on there? What do we need to know about Tom Serafin?
Well, they're in the final 4 weeks, a lot of things are going to get done down there because they also have veto-proof majorities. The Democrats are running the show, but the big game, obviously, is the remap. And you'll probably hear a lot about that as we move forward now that the census numbers are out. You don't have census numbers for the legislative maps, which those census numbers come out in September 30th. But the Constitution of Illinois requires a map to be drawn by the end of June. And so they're moving forward, the Democrats are, with their own version of a map, and they're going to put it forward. And, you know, you're going to see a lot of people, Change Illinois and other good government groups, probably take them to court because they're going to argue that you can't cut legislative maps without a secure census data. Now, you do have the census data available for congressional districts that came out just this past week. And it indicates that Illinois will, you know, continues to lose residents, but they do have enough to not to lose two seats, which everybody anticipated. They're going to lose one seat. So currently we have 18 congressional districts, 5 Republicans, and the remaining 13 Democrats. The Democrats will cut a seat that the Republicans currently have. So the Republicans will have 4 seats and the Democrats will have 13 seats. And the person that they cut out will be able to run at large in Illinois from any congressional district. And right now we don't know who that is. Candidates to lose their seat are Darren LaHood, Adam Kinzinger, Mary Miller, Rodney Davis, all, you know, Republicans, you know, in red areas. The swing district is Rodney Davis. And the irony of all ironies there is he is a Republican that's been able to win in that swing district. He is the ranking member on transportation. He's also on Ag Committee in Washington, D.C., and he chairs the Highways Committee, which it would be very impactful here in Illinois. And just bear me out for a minute. If in 22 next year, what happens has happened traditionally over the last 100 years, except for one or two election cycles, the Republicans win 15, 20 seats. They take over the House of Representatives. And he won't be there as a ranking member of transportation anymore if he loses his seat. So we'd be out. We'd only have 4 Republicans in a House of Representatives where the appropriation process starts with only 4 Republican seats. You know, Illinois always seems to be, hard luck. It's a hard luck state, you know. It's just the hard luck state lately. You know, only 3 states in the country lost population. Mississippi, West Virginia, and Illinois.
Yeah,
that's a bad group of states to be involved.
Yeah, you don't want to be in that group. No, I mean, I feel like, okay, but it was only 18,000 people lost in 10 years, and that was enough, Tom. That was enough.
Right.
I guess the others are gaining.
Well, we've lost a couple hundred thousand, but yes, but we should have grown. I mean, and people blame it on the weather. Some of the people, the governor is blaming it on the weather and the college students not coming back. Well, first of all, we need the college students to come back because they just got educated. They got energy. They'll help us. And the coldest state, Minnesota, they picked up 400,000 new residents. So we got other issues. People don't like the crime issue. They don't like the problem with the bad schools, and they want better neighborhoods and good jobs. It's really simple why people leave. It's not complicated. When my parents, you know, packed a car and moved out of Milwaukee in our neighborhood, they packed a car to get better schools and safer neighborhoods and better jobs. I mean, it's everybody does the same thing. It's not complicated.
No, except it is complicated when trying to reverse it and trying to bring people back.
Yes.
and let them know, hey, this is a great place to be. I could have sworn I've heard some success in doing that with millennials, that they are coming in, even though we're losing some other folks.
Well, I think the governor was making an effort to show that the numbers and the research that they did indicated that college students were not returning to Illinois. And I think it was making an effort there to show that, well, they're college students, but they're also some of the brightest younger individuals with energy that need to come back here. We need that new mind, and that we need those people working. And to his credit, the governor's credit, you know, he spent $48 million rallying all these good groups around the state of Illinois, 400 different groups, to go out and count the vote. So when you take a look at the census return, we were the number one state in the country with 71.5%. We were able to count more than anybody else in the union. We really did a good effort at that, and that's why we didn't lose 2 seats. We only lost 1 seat, and that's to the governor's credit. And what that means is that when federal dollars are, you know, earmarked for different states and individuals, we have that total number there. So we don't lose those federal funds coming here because they're going somewhere else. We were able to document that we still have a very good reputation, and not reputation, but size of population, 12.8 million people. So, you know, that saves us a lot of federal dollars. So they did a nice job doing that. But, you know, we're losing too many people, and too many of the people that we really need to rebuild this union, this state of ours.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, you think about the founders of YouTube, PayPal, Oracle, all came through the University of Illinois, and then they went to the West Coast. I mean, we want those people here. We want them to build businesses here, and they'll have their work cut out for them to try to reverse that trend. But I hope they do. I hope they do. It's a great place to be. Tom, we're out of time. I hope you have some good stuff planned in your weekend and everything like that.
Oh, yes. You know, I'm a White Sox fan. You know, despite the fact that we have bullpen problems and some kind of management problems in some of our games, unfortunately, the weather will improve and it should be a good weekend for baseball.
Nice. Well, enjoy it. And thank you for the time today, my friend.
Good to talk to you, Anna. God bless you. Happy spring.
You too.